hello, my darlings. Welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, L. Ariel, and we can be found at musicjobspodcast.com, musicjobspodcast.com. And probably last time I'm going to yap about this, but we are very proud because we got listed as the 2019 top career podcasts. I should say one of the top career podcasts. Still a wonderful honor. It's our second year in a row getting to the top career podcast list. Very, very grateful. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to all of our amazing, amazing guests. So we are all about music careers. That's right. We talk to the movers and shakers and innovators from all aspects of the music biz, trying to find out how exactly they got their music job. We are streaming on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and more. If you are listening to us on one of those lovely streaming platforms, we always love it if you would just give us some stars, show us some love, get us bumped up in the rankings so more and more people can find out about the little podcast that could, because again, this is all about you and helping you achieve the successful music career that you surely deserve. I don't know why that word is deserve. So last episode, I had the wonderful pleasure of speaking with Suzanne Polinsky. She is the founder of the Rockstar Advocate. She is a mindset music career coach. She is all about enabling, empowering, inspiring musicians, actually all creatives from all different walks of life, on having a successful creative career. And she provides tools and resources and teaches self-care and strategy and having the right mindset and mental health, just all essential, essential items that we all need to, again, pursue our heart's desire. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to that great episode, I urge you to go on back and listen to it. This week, I have the immense, immense pleasure once again to speak to a badass boss lady. Her name is Rosie Howe, and she is the founder of Straight Up Music Supervision, and she's going to tell us all about how she started this amazing business, what it's like to be an entrepreneur in the music biz, especially with the competitive industry of music supervision, how she got to where she is today, just a lot of great, great advice and experience that she's going to share. But before we do that, we're going to play a track from one of her favorite bands, PKWY, which I believe is Parkway, if I am not mistaken. And here is one of her favorite tracks, Come On Baby, Let's Go.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell me about your first memories of music. You know, that's the first question I always ask, and I always love hearing the response.
It's a great one. My first memory of music, I would have to say dancing in the kitchen with my mother. Aww. As we cooked. Yeah, we listened to a lot of 50s and Motown, and she would teach me how to dance with the doorknob. So.
Oh my God, that is so adorable. I love it. Now, was anyone in the family musically inclined?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My father played percussion when he was younger. My mother played the clarinet, I believe, when she was in school. And then my brother played trumpet when he was in school. And then, you know, of course, they encouraged me to play several different instruments growing up.
Nice. Tell us about that. What did you play?
Oh, gosh. Well, I started off playing piano and violin when I was in fifth grade and played that all the way through high school. And then in high school, I really, really loved playing the drums. And I know a lot of people say that, but they're the most fun. So finally, I got up some nerve to join the band. And I started as a percussionist, and then I was in the marching band as well.
Oh, that's That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So when you were doing the violin and piano, was it classical?
It was classical. We did have some jazz bands at our high school. So I played piano in the jazz band.
Okay. Did you have any sort of, did you feel like, restricted or not restricted, that's not the right word, like restrained at all by the lessons, or was it something that you were just like super excited just to learn the instrument? I'm always curious to hear kind of people's experiences with that.
Oh, yeah. Well, for me, you know, I always had a lot of encouragement at home, you know, particularly from my dad. He would come home with, you know, a guitar for me or buy a new piano. Like, he was really into, you know, cultivating my passion for music. So I think that made a big difference, you know, in my attitude of approaching my lessons. And I also had really great teachers, like my orchestra teacher, Mr. Barrett. He was wonderfully passionate and, you know, loved his students and loved his students learning from him. And, you know, he would pull me aside occasionally and be like, hey, you know, you should check out this artist, or, you know, what are you listening to these days? And that kind of stuff. So it was a really, really supportive environment. So I was always really excited, you know, to go to class and learn more.
I love it. Know. And then tell me about the band. What was the band?
The band was awesome. we had so much fun. I remember the first song that we played together was Eric Clapton's, was it Layla? Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. So yeah, we had a lot of fun, and, you know, we hung out outside of class too. So, you know, it was just playing music with my friends. It was a really, really good time. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot in those classes as well.
When did you start thinking about the future in terms of, like, I really want to do this beyond high school, or, you know, what was kind of your mindset at that time?
I'd probably say my freshman year of high school. I don't know how they let me do it, but I ended up taking a lot of art classes. I took art and music and English, you know, everything that I was passionate about. And, you know, at that time, as I was developing as an artist, I was like, you know, I could really do this. Could really just be, you know, play music and just, you know, live in my passion for the rest of my life. So, yeah, that's what I did. I decided to become a musician. And after high school, I was looking at colleges that I could, you know, pursue that career.
Tell us about that. What schools did you look at, and where did you end up going?
Okay, so my parents had a plan for me. They wanted me to be a nurse.
Okay.
And I grew up in Wisconsin. They wanted me to, you know, go to the UW. But of course, they had a different plan. So when I was thinking about where I wanted to go, I was like, I don't know what the top music schools are. You know, I have no direction. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. So we were at the bookstore one day, me and my family, and I saw a Rolling Stones college guide. And I opened it up, and they listed like the top five music schools in the country. And one was NYU, and the other one was Columbia College in Chicago. Well, I've always loved New York and was like, yeah, I can get into NYU. And I was like, if NYU doesn't work out, Chicago's close to home, and, you know, I love Chicago, so let's do it. So I literally applied to those two schools, and Columbia College was the only one that, you know, accepted me and also wrote me back. So aww. I ended up going to Columbia.
Still great, though. I mean, that's still great. Still awesome.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, we love.
I always love to hear about, you know, people's experience with music school. So kind of walk us through that and what your experience was like. And more importantly, too, did you feel like it was a good experience, that you made the right choice, like that kind of thing?
Yeah, Columbia College was an amazing experience. You know, you were there and your peers were just as passionate about their craft and your craft as you were. So that was a really great environment to be in. To be honest, I kind of partied a lot my freshman year and just played music. So I didn't start really getting serious and, you know, into it until my second year of college.
What were you playing? Like, what was your major?
I was an instrumental performance major my first year, and I was playing, I was in their choir, I was in a percussion band, and then I also played in a blues band at that time.
Oh, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. What were you playing in the blues band?
Drums.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So you were doing voice and percussion.
I was doing, yeah, and the voice was really, you know, you had to take certain classes. Mm-hmm. So I was never a singer, you know, I was more of an instrumental person. But, you know, I really got into it. I liked it. And, you know, we had a good group of people that enjoyed each other. So that made it easy. But yeah, the drums were my primary focus at that time.
Oh my God, your dad must have been over the moon.
He loved it. Yeah, he loved it. He was super proud. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So walk us through that. So you're in school. Did you find that, yeah, it was just like a natural evolution that you were really challenged, that you were, that you felt like you could really hone your chops, that kind of thing?
You know, to be honest, I kind of had a nervous breakdown after my first year in college. You know, everyone was so talented and, you know, I feel like as a musician, you know, I tried songwriting and I feel like I didn't have anything to say. So I really kind of had like a, you know, a midlife crisis at that point. So, you know, I was exploring other things at Columbia and they do require you to take a business course. So my second year, I was taking this business course, you know, kind of a little bit lost, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. You know, I'd spent so much time on becoming a musician. And I was sitting in business class one day, and my teacher hands us a packet of all the jobs that you can do in the entertainment industry. And I remember this so vividly. I was turning the pages, just kind of perusing, and I remember seeing music supervisor. And I read the description, and I was like, oh my gosh. And it was like everything clicked, like a light bulb went off. And I needed to know more about how to become a music supervisor. So, you know, I went to the almighty Google and Googled what a music supervisor was, and that just kind of snowballed into where I am today.
Wow, that's wild. Because, I mean, again, like music supervision is something that obviously has been around for a while, but I feel like only, I don't know, in the past like 5 to 7 years, it's really kind of blown up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's kind of wild that was something that you immediately sort of gravitated towards. So did you change your major? Were you just like immersing yourself in music business courses, or what happened?
Absolutely. Yep. I changed my major to music business management and started taking publishing classes. There was classes on copyright law and contracting that I took, marketing, and let's see what else. And then I was taking some music classes at that point, but, and then trying to, you know, finish everything up for that specific degree.
So was it one of those things where you thought, okay, you know, the performing, this is going to be more of like a hobby, or did you kind of see yourself as doing both? Like, what was your outlook at that point?
At that point, to be completely honest, I just fell in love with music supervision.
Wow.
It was like tunnel vision. I couldn't see anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after just feeling so disappointed, you know, I spent all this money to go to Columbia for this certain thing and, you know, not to be able to do it. But once I really thought about it, this is really what I was meant to do. You know, growing up, I loved music and movies, and I collected soundtracks and, you know, was inspired and discovered music through movies. So, you know, just that whole process, it all clicked for me. It made sense that this is what I was really supposed to be doing.
I think that's so fascinating because, again, this is a topic that I've talked about a lot, the sort of like pros and cons, or people like for or against music school, whether or not it makes a huge difference, or whether or not it's absolutely necessary, et cetera. And it's interesting because from my, you know, very like unofficial like data analysis of it, it's like the performers felt lacking. It was like a very esoteric, that, you know, almost like this kind of like sheltered environment in which to perform. But then you go out in the world, especially, not that you were, but I'm saying sort of, especially on the classical side, you're sort of like thrown into like, okay, hope you get a job with an orchestra. See ya. Just this sort of like sink or swim hope you can like find a day job to support your performing kind of thing. And I'm curious to hear your kind of take on that, what you thought about that.
Absolutely. I mean, I had a very similar experience. You know, Columbia was great for, you know, just getting, you know, I grew up in a small town, so being in Chicago was different and getting used to the big city life was great. Columbia was really great because they had, you know, a lot of their staff were professionals. They were working in the industry and they also had connections that they were willing to, you know, hook you up with. So that was really great. But, you know, when I graduated, same thing. It was like, I graduated when the market wasn't so great. So, you know, I struggled for a while. And also, you know, I had this business degree, but I didn't know how to get clients. I didn't know really how to market myself the way that I needed to, that was specific to my business, because, you know, it was so niche.
Did you do an internship or anything like that?
I did do some internships, actually. Yeah, I did do some internships. I worked for a music and movies festival in Chicago called SimFest. Mm-hmm. And that was an incredible experience. You know, I started off in their legal department. And, you know, I was basically the only one in their organization doing what I was doing. So they were like, yeah, we're going to hire you. And, you know, you can revamp all the contracts for the entire festival with our legal team, you know, like just really just kind of, you know, threw me in. So that was really great. And then they promoted me to assistant music director the next year. And I was helping the music director curate shows and, you know, negotiate contracts and onboard talent. So it was a really, you know, it was a great.
Was this after you graduated? They made you assistant director?
No, I was still in school, actually.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, you're practically, like, running the festival while still going to school. I love it.
It was great. They were an incredible group of people. And, you know, they loved having students there. You know, they loved teaching and giving you real experiences. So that was...
Did you feel limited at all because you were in Chicago versus, say, Los Angeles in terms of, like, having an internship with a music supervisor at Fox or something like that?
Absolutely. You know, I there are music supervision companies in Chicago, and there are, you know, music supervisors there, obviously. One of my mentors is a fantastic music supervisor based out of Chicago, Jessie LaBelle, and she worked for music dealers for a really long time, and then she's moved on to other opportunities. But yeah, I did feel like it was lacking. And, you know, she gave me some really great advice and a great foundation, but I knew I needed to be in Los Angeles if I wanted to be one of the big dogs and really, really be doing, you know, working for Fox, working on shows for CBS and for Netflix, although Netflix wasn't, you know, too big at that time.
That's interesting because I feel like things are definitely moving outside of LA, Nashville, New York, but that's interesting that there's still, in terms of like music supervisors, it sounds like maybe just, and also for a while, it will be like location, location, location. You really kind of need to be in one of the big hubs in order to do that. What do you think?
Yeah. And that's, I still feel that way today, even though I miss Chicago and the vibe, and, you know, they actually have, you know, a lot of people go and film there. The production companies, you know, that are contracting those productions are still here. So, and also, you know, it's, you know, this is kind of the center of the entertainment universe. So, you know, you get more than just film and TV. You get advertising, you get technology. You also get, you know, a lot of people say in the, I've, you know, licensed lyrics for authors and things like that. You just get like other opportunities here that you don't normally think of when it comes to music supervision.
So walk us through what happened once you graduated. Did you move immediately to LA or what happened?
I was all set to move to LA and then my father passed.
Oh,
so
sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, he's my favorite guy in the world. Mm. So I stuck around and saved some money and worked for Vivid Seats. I'm not sure if you heard of them. And then, yeah, I just decided.
Tell me about Vivid Seats. I don't know what that is.
Vivid Seats is a ticket reselling company.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they were, it was pretty cool to work with them. I was one of their VIP sales agents, so I was, you know, putting together packages and stuff for corporations and selling tickets to the Masters, things like that.
Tell me about that experience, because especially in, I feel in the new landscape, like sales and marketing are actually skills that are really, they're becoming more and more essential, like
crucial.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah. That, and you know, now that you think of it, that was a really great experience. You know, it taught me how to sell, and, you know, selling yourself in this business is the number one thing that you're going to do. So it was a good experience. I advanced quickly. I think every 3 months they were giving me a raise and a new title.
Wow.
So that was really fun. And
do you think you're like a natural born? You seem so like bubbly and outgoing. Are you sort of just a natural born salesperson? Or
I don't know. I think what it is I'm really personable and easy to talk to. And because learning how to sell is definitely a skill, something that you have to learn. But, you know, being able to be open and talking to people, I feel like that's something that you have or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably what it was, is, you know, people just, you know, I was able to, you know, be friendly and, you know, talk to people knowledgeably about these events, because I loved music, so that was really easy.
Did you feel like it kind of like helped with your confidence? Because I know obviously in college you went through this kind of crisis of faith where you were going down a certain path and then felt overwhelmed or maybe minimized or diminished by the incredible talent that was around you and maybe competition. So did that kind of change you in the way you kind of carried yourself and perceived the world for the better?
Definitely. Yeah. And it's so funny that you say it, because I never like realized that before and how much that place kind of contributed to where I am today. Yeah, definitely. It gave me the ability to really go for what I wanted. And that was something that, you know, it's nice. And, you know, I wanted to be the nice person and, you know, be polite and just have things come to me. And in this industry, you got to go out and get it. And that doesn't mean stepping on people. It doesn't mean, you know, doing unsavory things, but it does take some gumption and it takes initiative. So yeah, definitely Vivid Seats helped with that. And it taught me how to be a leader too. Because at one point when I was a VIP sales agent, they had me training a staff. I was helping one of the managers kind of watch the staff at night, because they ended up extending their hours, so they needed like a whole separate staff for nighttime. So I was working with them and training with them, and that really taught me, you know, how to be a leader as well, and how to, you know, educate people.
Yeah, and it's funny, isn't it, when you look back and you kind of see how things unfold or play out, because, you know, my experience when I first moved to LA was really gnarly. Like, It was just like, and I'm originally from Boston, and I was just like, what the fuck? And this wasn't even music. It was the entertainment industry, but it wasn't music. And just the level of competition and it's sort of like ground zero for every prom queen and every like quarterback from every high school. It's like, comes out to LA and is like, I'm going to be an actor and I'm going to be in the entertainment business or whatever. And so you're dealing with like literally every popular kid from every popular school in this city, in this industry. And that if you don't have sort of a kind of inner compass or like a strong sense of self, I feel like it can really kind of chew you up and spit you out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're not only dealing with, you know, trying to keep your sense of self, but you're dealing with other people's insecurities and other people's, you know, hate towards you for whatever reason, you know, like you're too big or you're, you know, your hair's too blonde or whatever it is, you know, you're constantly dealing with that. that here too. So, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that you had a rough time.
No, it was like, it's sort of like, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? Like, it was so good. It was like a sort of a good, because it was also really disconcerting because I'm used to like back east where it's like somebody doesn't like you, you know it.
Yeah.
At least you know where you stand.
Exactly.
Maybe it's the same in the Midwest. You know where you stand.
Yeah.
And then eventually they kind of like grudgingly are tolerant of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas out here I found, and not everywhere, I'll say that, like, but in the industry particularly, you had people that were like, oh my God, you're so awesome. You're so amazing. You're so cool. And you were like, wow, you think I'm cool. And then like 5 minutes later, they were like stabbing you in the back or like talking shit about you practically in front of your face
exactly.
or whatever. And you were like, wait, I thought you liked me. Like it was a very difficult social scene to kind of navigate in that sense, right? Like, it was just like, who the fuck are these people?
Oh, 100%. 100%. But you know what? It's really initiation because it is survival of the fittest out here.
Mm.
And it really, I'm sure, it gave you the tools to, it gives you a bullshit meter.
Yeah.
And you can read that right away and it cuts through all that bullshit and you know who's going to be on your team and who's not going to be.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a thing that we can take away from that. But same experience. I mean, these people out here are crazy. But, you know, we're crazy because we love what we do. And that supersedes any of anyone's bad attitudes out here.
That's a great point. Well, tell me, now I've told you about my experience. tell me about your experience. Like, tell me about your first year in LA. What was that like?
My first year in LA, it had a lot of ups and downs. And my first couple weeks were just amazing. I had a friend staying in Hollywood, and she let me crash for 3 months in her place. You know, no questions asked, which I'm eternally grateful for, especially to be in that area. It was really great. And my first couple of weeks, I just did a lot of networking. I met one of the heads of Cobalt Publishing at this tiny little intimate gallery where he came and spoke and, you know, came around us and we really got a chance to talk.
Let me interrupt you for just a second because I think people, when you say networking, like, can you kind of break that down a little bit for people so that, because I think some people are like, wait, how do you network? Like, how do you outreach? Like, what, you obviously had like some really good sales tools under your belt, but do you remember like how exactly you started to network?
That's actually a really great question. And networking has a lot of different levels and layers of it. Basically, it's socializing and, you know, you're developing relationships, and relationships are like money in this business, in a lot of different businesses, particularly in the entertainment industry. So when I first got here, I was just going to a lot of events. Like, I'd look on Eventbrite, you know, just Google things that were in my area, all free things, because I think it was broke at the time. But yeah, I was just going out and meeting people, and I had established contacts from Chicago. So of course I was connecting with them. And, you know, as I was here and progressed, then I started systemizing that. So not only was I going out and meeting people face to face, but then I started engaging with them online. So connecting with them via LinkedIn and, you know, keeping up with them via email, joining Facebook groups. And
so you would just like send an email like, hey, I'm Rosie, I'm interested in music supervision, like that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like I have like was I sending out resumes at that point? No, I think I was just kind of, you know, this is the projects I was working on, sent them some links. And just keeping it really casual, like, you know, if you ever want to meet for coffee or something like that, hit me up. I'm here.
That's great. That's great. And what happened? Like, what was the outcome of that?
You know, it was really awesome. You know, I made a lot of great contacts, especially in the sync world. You know, I was meeting a lot of people right away who were doing the same thing that I was doing. And that's how I got involved with the Guild of Music Supervisors.
Hmm.
And I was meeting all of the top dogs, like Thomas Gulebeck. I met Alex Potsavas, who is one of my favorite music supervisors of all time. She's part of the reason why I got into music supervision, because, you know, she just has done everything. And Gary Calamar, I remember meeting him at one of his music showcases that he does in North Hollywood. And he was just the nicest guy and, you know, smiled through my gushing and, you know, asked if I could do anything. And it was just a really great introduction. Everyone was really sweet and supportive and it was nice. It felt nice.
Wow. So it sounds like the community was small enough that you could actually, and accessible enough that you could actually, yeah, go just show up in an event and you actually like can have a little bit of a conversation or at least like introduce yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that surprised me because, you know, you hear a lot of stuff about LA and a lot of that stuff is true, but they are a close-knit family, and, you know, they really welcomed me with open arms. Not to say that I didn't have some unsavory experiences, because, you know, there are good and bad people. But in general, they were very welcoming. And even to this day, a lot of the people that I met my first year were still friends, were still, you know, connecting. Yeah.
Well, that speaks volumes to you. And again, it's something that I keep hearing over and over. It's like the importance of relationships and that, like, you don't burn your bridges and that, you know, you stay in touch and that it is indeed a small town.
Yeah.
When it comes to your particular industry and that it really, it can only serve you to just maintain good relationships. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, you want to be giving to them as much as they give to you.
Hmm.
You know, that's the fundamental, you know, the foundation of a relationship is that you're giving and not just receiving. But I think it's interesting you say about burning bridges because, you know, as, you know, you progress in your career, particularly in Los Angeles, I feel like you learn who you need to burn bridges with.
Hmm.
And I definitely learned that in my first year here, you know, who I should be associated with and who I shouldn't be.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
How did you come? Was it just like keeping your ear to the ground kind of thing? Or was it sort of like touching a hot stove?
It was like tripping and going face first into a hot stove.
Got it. Okay. And then being like, not going to do that again.
Exactly. I was working for an artist management company. That was the first job that I got out here. And I had done talent management before when I was in college. And I was working with two artists, a female and a male, both pop singers. You know, loved them to death. Loved them. You know, unfortunately, it got complicated with their manager, with the male singer as well. We weren't sure if he was involved in drugs or something, but it just kind of went south. And, you know, I told myself I wasn't going to do talent management anymore. And then I ended up in this situation and I was like, you know, I'm done. I would rather work with artists in the capacity that I do than manage their day by day.
That's a good point. Yeah. It's a messy business. We had a guy, on here, one of the producers who like essentially helped to discover Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh my gosh.
It's like, and it was like the way he described it is like herding heroin addicted cats.
Yeah. Yes.
That's how I would describe it. Like trying to herd cats that are high on heroin. That's what it basically sounds like.
It's so true. It's so true.
I mean, you wouldn't, it's like, oh, Red Hot Chili Peppers, big shock, right? It's, like,
no, definitely not.
Right? You're like, yeah, okay, I it's kind of predictable, like that's what, but it just was like, oh my God, this poor guy, you know, like just trying to get them like all in one room and like actually recording. And it's just like, holy shit, you know? So I can only imagine.
But,
you know?
But that's like on a good day, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
That's what's on a good day, but like when they're having a bad day or you're adding like a drug or alcohol issue with it, or, you know, two people in the band are sleeping together and they've had a fight, you know what I mean? Or just 100 different, you know, issues can pop up with artists that you have to deal with.
Yeah, totally. So, all right. So back to good old safe music supervision. So how did you finally kind of land yourself in more of a music supervisor role? Tell us about that.
So back when I was in Columbia, I was trying to figure out how I could get my start. And one thing that Jesse had said to me was, you know, just do any project, just take anything and start building up your credits. So, you know, I was looking for filmmakers to work with, and I ended up looking on Craigslist, and there were a ton of ads for, you know, filmmakers looking for actors. And I reached out to one and I said, hey, I'm a music supervisor. This is what I do. You know, I'd love to work for free on your film and, you know, contribute to your project and build up my credit list. He reached out to me. He was a nice guy. And we went and grabbed coffee, and bippity boppity boop, I was working on one of his films. And then we ended up doing a pilot for a series together as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. So it sounds like, yeah, take the freebies, because you never know where they're going to lead.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, you kind of have to do that, you know, at a certain point when you're first starting out. And, you know, occasionally I will do a free one at this point if it's a student or if I'm really into the project and they don't have a lot of money. You know, we always try and work it out in some way or another.
Cool. Okay, so you're working on this pilot, and then what happened?
So I'm working on the pilot, and that one was really great because Alex Kopp, the keyboardist from Third Eye Blind, reached out to me at this point. And he was like, you know, I just
like, hey, Rosie, what's up?
So I can't remember if he like emailed me or if we started chatting on LinkedIn. I feel like he emailed me though.
Oh my God. How cool is that?
Yeah. It's my claim to fame, I think.
Yeah.
It was cool. that's the only thing. No, I'm just kidding. So he just had started producing, and you know, same thing. He wanted to build up his credit list and start working in film and television. So I was like, yeah, let's do it. So yeah, we started working together. He was really great to work with.
Oh my God, how amazing.
Yeah, it was really, really fun. Unfortunately, the project didn't get finished. The director kind of ghosted everybody. So unfortunately, that project didn't get finished. And, you know, he moved, you know, obviously he was working on other things, and I started working on other things too. But it was great. What we did together was really, really fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think it's sort of one of those, like, you know, you just chalk it up to a good experience regardless of the outcome. Yeah,
totally. Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, you learn by doing, especially as a music supervisor. A lot of music supervisors have learned by doing. You know, there's more books now than there ever has been, but you know, a lot of people just kind of learn on the job. And you know, that wasn't excluded from that.
Right. So what happened after that?
So after that, I did another TV pilot in Chicago. And I was also, so the guys that were running SimFest also owned a production company called Bulletproof Films. Mm-hmm. And they had me come on as their music supervisor. And it was me and a music producer in the music department.
How cool is that? So that's that's like the festival you were basically running.
Yeah.
and there you go. Like years later, they're like, please help us.
Oh, that was actually, I think it was during the same time when I was working with them. I was doing the festival and working for the production company, and then worked for them a little bit after I graduated. And we did a film together. We did do a couple of films together. I think we did a couple of films together. And then, you know, me and the music producer both graduated from Columbia, and, you know, it was time to move out to LA. So we both did it.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. But so you've had that experience, and then are you saying that they came back again and said,
oh, no, that was all, I did all that when I was in Chicago.
Got it.
And, you know, the guys were great. They, you know, wanted to primarily focus on the festival. So that was another thing too, that, you know, that just didn't work out. They had other priorities, and you know, it was a good point for me to figure out, you know, what my next step was, which naturally was Los Angeles.
Got it. Okay. So fast forward now, like you've done a few of these projects, nothing's kind of panned out. Where did you go next?
Let's see. When I moved here, I was still working on a project that I had started in Chicago, and one of the directors had referred me to another client, and I started doing a film with that client while I was here. And in the meantime, I was interviewing everywhere. I interviewed at Warner Brothers. I interviewed at Source 4.
Wow. So that's great, because you obviously, if you're interviewing, you've got good, solid resume, like good, solid material, because if you're actually getting interviews and stuff, yeah?
I don't know. I feel a little different about it, to be honest.
Really?
I feel like I interviewed everywhere those first couple of years, and no one wanted me because of my experience.
Huh.
So I was like, well, you know, I haven't got a gig yet doing music licensing. You know, people are starting to approach me a little bit. So I was like, well, I want to keep working. So, you know, I'll just kind of pursue the freelance thing while I'm looking for a regular job.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that.
Were you getting paid for that?
Yes. Yeah.
Starting to get paid. So that's good. Oh, so yeah. Now you could actually like eat and pay your rent.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. At that point it was, you know, I had learned a little bit more about the craft and was definitely getting paid at that point.
Okay. So then the freelance, I'm assuming like freelance probably opened a few more doors.
It did. It did. You know, I was marketing myself. I was networking, you know, just really just trying to do as much as I could and build up my credit list, you know, and that led me to another project because I was posting on Facebook groups and I met a filmmaker through there whom I've been working with for 2 years, maybe three now.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's been really great. He is a film that we've been working on, and I'm so excited about this project. It's an avant-garde project, and it's also a silent film.
Oh, so, wow. That's amazing. So it's going to be like all music, yeah?
It's going to be all music, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's been really fun. Yeah.
So did you end up opening up your own shop, or what exactly transpired?
Yeah, so I was, I just kind of, you know, promoted myself as a freelancer.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually I had never thought about owning my own business, but you know, as I started getting more and more business, I needed something to take care of business through, you know, run my finances through and things like that. And a lot of people were telling me people trust you more if you have a company behind you. So at that point I started straight up music supervision, and you know, it was just kind of an umbrella, but you know, it's starting to develop into something solid. And, you know, something that I've decided to grow. And I have really, really big aspirations for Straight Up.
So, that's so amazing. Well, congratulations. That's so huge.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, to be an entrepreneur. And I want to hear your insight on this, because my feeling is that independent businesses like yourself are really able, even though we have like these huge conglomerates like Disney just took over Fox, and like, you know, obviously like Amazon is like, we're all basically Amazon people at this point, you know, they like practically own us. But I do feel like, interestingly enough, I feel like these big companies are outsourcing more and more and more, so that there are these opportunities for businesses like yours to get in there and work on different projects, different movies, different shows, that kind of thing. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, actually. And I know Netflix too outsources a lot. You know, they are just starting to develop their in-house music department, which is crazy with how much content, you know, they've been producing, especially in the last, you know, 7 years or so. So it is really interesting. And, you know, I think even the big businesses are seeing the benefits of having an entrepreneurial mindset and are starting to follow those models, you know, which includes, you know, hiring contractors and not having in-house departments. So yeah, it's really, really interesting. And it's a really, really exciting time. Competition is really high. But again, like we said, survival of the fittest, and you and I are beasts in this jungle. You know what I mean?
I love it. Well, so two more questions. One is the idea. So my impression is that like music supervisors are still kind of gods and goddesses in terms of like
who artists are trying to meet or pitch to, that kind of thing. And then the other side of that is, how do you find your music? How do, what resources do you use? So it's like kind of a two-prong, like, are you just inundated all the time with artists? Please use my song. Please use this.
Yeah, we definitely are seen as the gatekeepers to film and television and other types of media, particularly when, you know, you're talking about the music supervisors that work for major TV stations and film production companies. But I think what's really important to remember about music supervisors is they're not only the gatekeepers, but they're advocates for artists. And that was one thing that really drew me to this business and to music supervision, is that we all start off as music lovers, we start off as artists, and, you know, we're there to give you a chance at bettering your life. You know, we want to sync your music. We want you to get those royalties. We want you to be able to, you know, have a steady income and buy a house and save for retirement. You know, we want you to be an unstarving artist. So I think that's something really important to remember about music supervisors, is we do it for the artists, the love of music. In terms of how I get my music, yeah, I get a lot of submissions. And I also have a preferred vendors list that I work with, particularly, you know, people that I've worked with before, or I really like their music and, you know, how they work with their artists. You know, I do a lot of due diligence before I start working with someone, because, you know, I need to make sure that they're going to be a good match for that project and for that client. But also, you know, if I'm on a project and I need something that I'm not in direct contact with, I go back to my sync community. And, you know, we're all really good about sharing contacts and sharing musicians and connecting each other with what's needed.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Do you ever find artists on Spotify or Apple Music or things like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. SoundCloud is a big one for me. Spotify, Pandora. I'm also one of those crazy people that are Shazamming things in the grocery store, you know, and like holding up my phone in the middle of the aisle trying to get the song. So I'm really, yeah, it's music. You know, since I've started working in this area, music just flies at me from everywhere.
Do you still go to, like, live shows or things like that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. When I get time, I definitely do. Yeah. And I also go to the movies a lot, too. You know, a movie theater is kind of like a church for me. So whenever I get to sneak off into a movie theater, it's a good day.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I saw The Avengers Endgame.
Ooh, what do you think?
I actually loved it. I went more for my boyfriend. He's like a huge, you know, Marvel superhero fan. But I've seen, you know, at least a few of the movies, et cetera. And I thought it was really well done. It was actually surprisingly, as people have said, like very emotional.
Yeah.
And I think as a result of doing this podcast, I was like really into the music, like paying much more attention to the music than I normally would have.
Yeah.
And of course I'm a dumbass because I haven't looked up yet who actually composed the music for the movie, but I will, because it really, I was definitely like, wow, this is really a really well done soundtrack. And I am curious to find out who worked on it, like who contributed to it. So yeah, it's just something that I think once you are aware of it, it's everywhere. You can't avoid it.
It's totally true. Yeah. It's totally true. And people have said that to me too. They're like, you know, I never started thinking about music until I heard you talking about it so much.
Aww,
and like, now I hear
so
it
great.
Everywhere. You know, I hear it in stores and things like that.
I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, you know what? I'm looking it up right now, and it's one of my favorite composers of all time, Alan Silvestri.
Nice. Yes, I have heard of him. That's fantastic. Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Amazing soundtrack. Yeah. Really well done. Well, we're running out of time, but do you want to share any, well, obviously share your website and any other like social media stuff that you want to share with us?
Yeah, definitely. You can follow me on Instagram at Rosie's Listening, and Rosie's is Rosiez. And definitely check out the website, www.straightupmusicsoup, S-U-P-E,
www.ReachOutToMusic.com and you can check out recent work, artists that we work with. There's videos on there. And if you're an artist interested in submitting music or wanting to work with Straight Up, we have a vendors page that you can visit. You just select whether you're a composer or producer, fill out a brief questionnaire, and then we'll check out your work and get back to you.
That is just so nice of you. Thank you so much. And it's been so fun having you on the show. So thank you again for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure.
My special, special thanks to Rosie for being such an amazing, wonderful guest and taking the time out to speak with us all about her incredible career, which I have no doubt will just continue to blow up. So again, her company is Straight Up Music Supervision. You can go to the website Straight Up Music Soup, MUSICSUPE.com. And then her Instagram is Rosie's Listening, RosieZListeNin. So be sure to follow her on the Instagram, the Facebook, and more. Okay, my loves, thus ends another week of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your hostess with the mostest, L Ariel. You can find me and my music at LARIELmusic.com. That's LARIELmusic.com. And I am also on the Instagram and Facebook and Twitter at LARIELmusic. So give me a follow. Say hi. Stop on by. Okay, babies. So have a wonderful, wonderful, productive week. Continue to just kick ass, take names, and remember to just keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you give up.